Hello and welcome to the last Texas Tribune Tribcast taping of the year. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
We really can't sneak a new one in next week, huh?
We're going to do a new one next week, but it'll be kind of an amalgamation.
A mashup.
Right.
Web gems.
Anyway, hello.
Ross Ramsey, our managing editor.
Howdy.
And Ben Philpott from the Tribune and KUT News.
Hi there.
Hello. So today we're going to do some quick news hits and then jump into our 2011 predictions because it was requested by our many Facebook fans. So, Ben, let's start with you on the census numbers.
So there are more people in Texas.
Aren't there fewer more people? I actually was looking for the number to be closer to 26 million. I'm kind of surprised that the number wasn't higher.
Well, this was, you know, if you look overall, the entire the country census, this was one of the second slowest 10-year growth percentages we've had.
Overall, not in Texas, because we grew by about 21%, a little bit more than 20%.
What did they say the country grew slower than it has since the Depression?
Yes.
Right,
I believe that's right. It still grew at about 9.7%.
Right,
but that is the slowest rate they've had in quite a long time.
And Texas only grew twice that fast.
Yes, Texas grew more than twice that fast. And Texas actually, over the decades, has grown anywhere between 20%, 22%, 24%. This year was on the low end at only 20.6.
But the significance of the growth is evident in what we're predicting now will be the result of the redistricting of congressional seats.
Apparently, right? 4 million additional people will get you 4 new congressional seats, and that's what we had in Texas.
And no other state is going to add this many.
No. Florida adds two.
Florida adds two, and a number of states add one.
Yeah.
And then everybody else is losing.
Including New York State.
Yeah, New York and Ohio were the two big losers, each lost two seats.
And, you know, this assumption that somehow the political map nationally is going to be redrawn and will have a significant impact on the 2012 election, I guess, is given the lie a little bit by the fact that when they recalculated what the election in 08 would have been had the census numbers been in effect then and apportionment been in effect then, Obama would have only been 6 fewer electoral votes. He still would have beaten McCain significantly.
Right. You know, one of the interesting things down in these numbers is that the Republicans were very successful at the state legislature level all over the country. And those state legislatures, including the one in Texas, will draw the new political districts based on these new census numbers
for the next Congress.
In that respect,
the impact of this last election will be felt going forward because more Republican legislatures will do redistricting.
Right. The Republicans get to institutionalize the wins they got on November 2nd in these numbers that will hold for 10 years. And then the effect on the presidential races, your congressional seats, that's the important number in your electoral college votes. So Texas has 4 more electoral college votes. It's a red state, 4 more for the red. You know, that's how that goes.
Yeah.
Texas has added congressional seats every year for the last, or every census ready for the last 7 census, the last 7 decades.
Well, it's like the UConn women's basketball team.
Is there a sensei?
And Houston, I believe, is expected to top Chicago in terms of population, right?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that because individual breakdown hasn't come out yet.
And Julian Castro was on Facebook the other morning saying that he believed that the numbers would show that San Antonio has passed Philadelphia.
Interesting. Wow.
So that both San Antonio and Houston may move up in the national rankings of city populations.
Well, and so then where do we put these new congressional seats?
That's the big question, isn't it?
And we don't have the county level stuff. As I talked to a guy yesterday, he said you can't bring your crayons out until you find out the county level numbers and the precinct level numbers, which we get sometime in February or March, I believe.
Yeah, they're due by April 1st, but they often come out earlier. So the
assumption is that you know, these seats, the first blush is these seats will go where the population went. So Dallas County, Houston, the Valley, and then somewhere along the I-35 corridor Waco and San Antonio.
It's actually north of
Dallas County, right? Dallas County lost population, didn't grow as fast as the rest of the state, but Denton and Collin and Rockwall did. Right.
So you're assuming, Ross, that it would be Republican seat up there?
I'm assuming 3 Republican
potentially
seats.
Potentially a Republican seat in Houston.
Around Houston somewhere, right?
Potentially a Democratic seat.
In the Valley.
And potentially a Republican seat somewhere in Central Texas.
Yeah, somewhere in Central Texas.
And possibly one of the districts that would be impacted by that in Central Texas might be Mike McCall's, which would lose some of the Democratic Travis County voters.
Well, his district stretches
even more Republican.
He's got one of those districts that stretches all the way from Austin to Houston.
Yeah, it's like a barbell.
A lot of these districts you look at and you go, well, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So he could be he might lose Republicans in Harris County, but he might gain Republicans in, say, the Valinda Bolton district in South Austin.
Maybe so.
I mean, depending on how they kind of draw it around.
The point is that the Democrats can really only hope, barring something unforeseen, to get maybe one seat out of these four at
or
most.
Two. I mean, there could be a swingish district.
There could be a Democrat in Dallas. Right. I mean, how they drew it.
If we had the last legislature, if we had the legislature that was 76 Republicans and 74 Democrats, I think it would have gone 2-2.
The likelihood of 2-2 was greater.
I think with a legislature that's 101-49 or maybe 102-48, depending on how this Howard Neal fight goes, that legislature is not going to draw. They're going to draw a proportionate number of seats, and it's going to be three more for the Republicans, one more for the Democrats.
The only way they might get 2-2 is if the Justice Department says, you know what, actually it's going to be 2-2.
And let's stay on the topic of the legislature and do kind of a quick wrap on what's happened with the speaker's race in the last few days. Ross?
Sometime between Christmas and New Year's, Warren Chisholm will drop a letter on Larry Taylor and the House Republican caucus that has the required at least 10 signatures to force a vote inside the caucus for a speaker. The idea would be the Republican caucus votes, narrows it to one candidate from Joe Strauss, the current speaker, Warren Chisholm, and Ken Paxton, the two challengers, and then comes out and votes as a block. Doesn't matter what the Democrats think.
And they're obligated at that point?
He says they're obligated to hold the vote that he asks for.
But are they obligated coming out of the caucus?
Well, that's a good question.
Floor of the House.
That's a question.
Does the result require even the people who come out on the losing side of the caucus vote to hold their nose and vote for the guy who won?
Yeah, and then the question on that is, even if it does require it, or else what? If you're a chairman, let's say you go into this thing. Let's just make up a scenario here. You go into this thing, the caucus votes for Ken Paxton. You come out and you're a Joe Strauss guy, and you go to the floor on January 11th and you vote for Strauss. What are they going to do? Kick you out of the caucus? So.
Yeah, you're already going to lose your right. You're already going to lose your chairmanship.
This whole thing is going to be a show trial anyway, right?
Well, it's one of those things where if you're going to do a force play, you better be able to make a fist. And I don't know how they make a fist here. I don't know how they do the or else what.
In the old days, we used to say about Craddock, if you're going to shoot the king, you better kill the king.
Right.
You know, as kings go, Joe Strauss is less scary than Craddock. On the other hand, if you're going to go into the caucus and call for a vote, you better be damn sure you have enough votes to knock off the speaker. And if you don't, I mean, you're relying on this speaker to be even of temperament and lacking in a desire to exact punishment.
He's like Santa Claus here. He's making a list. And he comes out of the caucus with a list. And then he goes into January and February and decides who's going to be on his best committees and who's going to be the winners and who's going to be the winners in redistricting. And if you're on the naughty list, right, it's going to be a rough session.
Well, what is Chisholm's play here to do this in the caucus, where I assume the vote for the preferred candidate is going to be open as opposed to closed?
I think he's out as it stands. Chisholm's on the outs. And the only way you can get back on the ins is, you know, you roll the dice. It's a low-risk shot because he's not on the inside. He's not.
Well, no, but it's a low-risk shot, but it's also a high-risk shot because he takes this chance and it doesn't come out even approaching what he intends for it to. What does he do then?
Well, he hasn't lost anything because he doesn't have anything to lose. That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's why it's a low-risk shot. Chisholm's not one of the guys that's in the leadership.
It's low risk in terms of punishment to him, but but it's a low percentage play as well.
And here, to your point, every member of the caucus has to look at this, you know, through his or her own lens. And, you know, for some of them, it's a high risk shot, right? I'm a chairman now. How am I going to vote on this thing?
And most chairmen, you know, seem to be fine with Strauss. They've even put out that letter saying that we stand with him, we support him. And Dan Branch has said he did not think they should choose a speaker inside the caucus.
It's really about, you know, at the bottom of this, it's really about, is the House going to run kind of the way it's always run, which is sort of coalition government. Let's form 76 votes however we form them, whether it's Democrats, Republicans, people with one tooth, you know, whatever. Or is this going to be a House that is divided along the aisle like Congress is? And there's a contingent out there that wants it divided along the aisle, and a contingent that believes, you know, look, we're the Republicans. We have 101 members. This is ours, and we should consolidate our victory, and we should run this thing. And why are we listening to those losers over there? And if you're going to run it out of caucus, that's how you're going to run it.
But again, the problem that we were discussing before the podcast, that you know, the great Burka has pronounced this race effectively over by way of tallying up what he assumes are all the possible Paxton votes, and he only gets the 35, which last time I counted was less than half of a majority of the House.
Right.
It's still a math problem.
It's a math problem for Paxton. It's a math problem for Chisholm. It's a math problem for the ABJs.
Right.
Right.
Right. The variable here, you know, the a lot of the outside groups have been very effective with phone banks and, you know, pestering members, hounding them, they call it, pestering members on the phone, calling their district offices. Van Taylor told me that before he switched to Paxton from Strauss, this is a freshman from Collin County, that he was receiving 30 calls a day at his House office from inside his own district. And, you know, it's 150 calls a week. That's significant.
Right, but in point of fact, in the last couple of weeks, have any of you, at least Ben Ross, heard any kind of fulminating out in the world about this
no.
race has gone quiet?
I would watch for Monday. You know, you get out of the Christmas holiday.
Monday, you know, meaning the Monday after Christmas.
Monday after Christmas. You know, New Year's Day is fun, but it's not sacred. So let's get out of Christmas and see what the calls do between the 27th and the 11th of January.
And Chisholm says the 29th is when he turns in the letter.
Right.
So does he turn in the letter with 11? He has 11 at the
Land Troop jumped on the wagon as it was beginning to roll out of the station.
I expect
does he turn in with 11? Does he turn in with 30? Does he turn it in with 5? I mean, he can't turn it in with 5, but...
That's an interesting game. That's an interesting game too. That's another vote count.
Well, the other thing is that Bob Garrett did a piece yesterday in the Dallas News online presuming that the people on the list who asked for a caucus vote were all anti-Strauss votes. Well, in fact, several of the people on that list, including, I gather, Kelly Hancock and Alan Fletcher, are not Strauss votes. The assumption was that, well, they had been Strauss votes. This must signify that they have withdrawn.
Strauss said the day after the election that he's not opposed to a caucus vote.
Well, wouldn't you be not opposed if you knew you were going to win?
In fact, he poked Chisholm in the eye about it. You know, Chisholm protested having a caucus vote when Tom Craddock was elected back in the day and signed a letter to that effect, and now he's pushing this thing.
So your prediction, Ross, to help Elise with her transition,
Strauss will be the next speaker.
You predicted it.
I think that's right.
I thought you were going to not predict it.
No, I'm going to hedge like crazy, but I think that's the result you're going to get.
The clip that will be removed from this podcast
is I'm going to hedge like crazy.
Is the previous one where you predicted it.
No, our predictions will not be wrong. These are going to be such good predictions that when we come back in 2012, we're going to be like, wow.
It's like every other prediction. It's, you know, based on air.
I mean, they're not supposed to be crazy predictions. I thought that was the memo. I've got a crazy one ready.
Oh, you do?
Oh, let's hear it.
What's your crazy one?
All right, here's my crazy prediction.
Okay, here we go.
Something.
Does this have Alabama in it?
Well, I mean, Alabama will win the next national title after this year. But beyond that, actually, no, we won't. We lose a lot on offense. Here's my crazy prediction. Something or a group of somethings passed by the Republican Texas legislature and signed into law by the governor will hurt the Republicans in 2012 in the presidential race.
Something that specifically happens in Texas.
Yes.
Really?
Why Texas?
Because I think you have a very red state. Here's my reasoning behind my crazy prediction. You have a very red state. You have a state that is pushing things, some members of the Republican legislature, pushing things like immigration. There will be other kind of Tea Party bubbling points that will come up during the session. They will pass. They will get signed into law, and someone's going to make a commercial during 2012, and it's going to make the Republicans look bad.
That was just vague enough to be like Nostradamus. I like that. Sometime in the land.
I don't know what the hell he's talking about. Right.
I think a campaign point for the Democrats that will help them in 2012 will come out of something passed in the 2012 in the 2011
and probably get featured on the Anderson Cooper show first.
Right. Right.
Well, there's my prediction. Texas. Okay, my prediction is that some sort of civil war will break out between the two factions of the Republican Party in Texas. I think it's ripe for that. The speaker's race, or whatever it is, this pseudo-speaker's race, as we've seen it so far, has sort of planted that sort of animosity between the two camps that we're starting to see emerge. But something, I think, issue-wise, or various issues coming up in the session ahead will end up creating that schism, I think. I think that's a pretty easy one.
And that's one prediction. We only get one?
No, you get to keep going. We get to keep yabbering about this stuff.
Oh, let's just keep going around the table.
I got more. Go ahead, Mr. Smith.
All right, here are some crazy predictions. You ready? The Republican nominee for president in 2012 will be Marco Rubio.
Ooh, good choice.
having pronounced the field unelectable, undesirable, or any other un, the Republican Party is going to throw a long ball and say, we'll see you're inexperienced and just come out of the state legislature in 08 and raise you in 2012. And the entire dynamic of the 2012 race will be upended by a Hail Mary pass by the Republican Party. So that's one big, weird prediction. Second prediction is Kay Bailey Hutchinson will run for re-election to the United States Senate and will ultimately have no challengers in the primary who are seriously plausible challengers.
No Williams, no Dewhurst, no
She'll have more like a Deborah Medina style. Sorry, Ms. Medina. Somebody who will make a lot of noise, but it will ultimately be sound and fury, signifying about 20% of the vote. Kay will run again. And the Democrats will actually field a seriously competitive candidate for the Senate. But it's, you know, the outcome of that race is not going to be determined. It's going to be a real race. But Kay, the Republican nominee for U.S. Senate in 2012 will be Kay Bailey Hutchinson.
Wow, that's out there. I think Perry will turn up on a national ticket. You know, all protestations to
Rubio and Perry.
Well, I don't know that he'll run for president. He says he won't. He's clearly running this national thing.
Maybe he'd be Rubio's running mate.
Maybe you could do a Rubio Perry. The world's ready for a Sunbelt candidacy. That's kind of an interesting idea. I mean, especially with the new census numbers. But I think he'll show up on
Rubio will campaign in Texas, and the police will stop him and ask for his papers.
based on the Bill Perry signs that Ben thinks will be an issue in the next election. Yeah, I think Perry will show up on a national ticket as a Veep. I think Elise is right about the split in the Republican Party. I completely disagree on Hutchinson, and I think because of the split in the Republican Party, she'll have a stout primary opponent, maybe who hasn't been named yet, that'll come from somewhere in the Tea Party, somewhere in the anti-Washington crowd.
Dan Patrick.
Maybe so.
Somebody like that, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, you know, based on how strong the Tea Party acts during the 2011 legislative session, you could see Medina come back with more than 20%, but who's going to lead the Tea Party in the session? It's going to be Dan Patrick.
Well, the other thing I'll point out, I think, as by way of a prediction, is I think the Democrats are going to be a lot stronger in opposition during this session than we assume. We are quick to pronounce the Democrats inept, almost gleeful in our pronouncements.
You're pronouncing them ept.
I would say that they're in the vicinity of ept. They're ept-ish. I think that what you're going to see is an interesting comeback of the Democrats from a low ebb. Just as in the last couple of weeks, Obama has managed to find a little bit of footing, and the Democrats are kind of up in arms over, you know, what to do in this new world. START passes, the tax cut passes, food safety bill passes. It's actually, in some respects, been the best 6 weeks that Obama has had in the last 2 years. Or year, right? Mm-hmm. The Democrats in Texas, if they are able to remain in lockstep in opposing, and in fact, there was some discussion, I guess, in this office yesterday about the possibility that the Democrats just let the Republicans do whatever they want during the session and have the results be on them. I actually think that there's an interesting play here for the Democrats to do better at all this than we assume, simply by standing in lockstep in opposition to whatever the Republicans put forward.
Well, and you know, in terms of gaining momentum in the next election, you know, there's one case you could lay out where the Democrats are going to gain 10 seats in the next election just based on redistricting.
In the Texas House.
In the Texas House.
Yeah,
there's no way they can draw lines for 90 or well, for 100.
They'll try to do their best to draw lines for 90 really strong districts. And when you do that, you weaken the other 10 or 11 or whatever that they have. So,
right.
You know, Democrats could either way sit on the sideline or play hardball or whatever and still in the next election cycle maybe pick up 15 seats, which would seem pretty amazing considering low water mark now.
I think the party of no served the Republicans nationally well in the last 2 years. I think the party of no might well serve the Democrats better than we assume this session.
Yeah, there was one Democratic chairman who said to me that he actually told Strauss that he didn't want to remain chairman because he didn't want to be beholden and wanted to vote against the budget and vote against big things. And so he didn't want to be a Strauss chairman. Which might be interesting for somebody like Rene Oliveira to say, because he's at the head of Ways and Means right now.
Mm-hmm.
And do you really want to be head of Ways and Means? Because that's the committee where that's the revenue, that's the committee
that's
where
they raise taxes.
Where you
well,
raise
and if,
revenue,
and if you're
right,
a, so. If you're a chairman, the assumption is that you're going to basically hold your nose and support. Right. What the
right.
What comes
There's
out
a political
of the
pressure
office.
To do so, of course. So.
This legislature is going to be interesting. I mean, one of the I don't know exactly where to put this one, but the prediction I would make is that this legislature finds $4 or $5 or $6 billion in new revenue. And they're going to find it either in fees or they're going to find it in cuts to what they send to local school districts, forcing local taxes to go up,
right.
Cost shifting. But they're going to find $4 or $5 or $6 billion in new money because I don't think politically they can make the cuts that these numbers are going to demand. I think that they cut into dear programs that people say, no, we want to cut government, but we don't want to cut that.
And so what's going to be the most plentiful source of new revenue during the next
session? Is going to be underfunding public education and forcing local tax increases.
Well, that's not really a source of new revenue.
It's a
moment.
It's a cough ship.
Well, what about
it's a cough
new,
ship.
What
Your
about
taxes
new
are
money?
Going to go up because
what about
of what the legislature does.
New revenue.
New revenue is going to be gambling.
So destination casinos?
Whoa. I think they'll pass gambling.
Well, will it be racinos, destination casinos? What?
I certainly hope for the destination ones. That's my favorite.
Did you see the Eric Dexheimer story in the Statesman yesterday that said that the percentage of people playing the lottery in Texas is at an all-time low?
Right, doing exactly what they said it would do when they passed it
in 1990. Yeah, too.
Back in the day, so yeah. I think they'll do casinos.
Any last prediction from Mr. Philpott for 2011?
The Atlanta Braves will not make the World Series next year, but neither will my Yankees.
But the Cards will.
Really?
Lance Berkman's going to power the Cards.
And the ghost of Earl Weaver will manage the World Series champion.
Yes, yeah, there's my prediction. I think the Atlanta Braves will make, the Phillies are going to beat everyone. I hate them. Anyway.
All right.
You have no other big predictions?
Well, my other big prediction is just a minor prediction, actually. It's that David Dewhurst has this great opportunity to be a really strong leader in the Senate because it is sort of the stopgap or the reasonable chamber out of the two. And he won't. He won't really step up to be.
Which points to my prediction that something's going to come out of the legislature and be signed that will be brought back up in 2 years.
Yeah, because Dewhurst has never had that killer instinct, has never been one to take hostages in the way that Craddock did, because Craddock didn't even care about what happened to the hostages. And so Dewhurst, who has a real opportunity.
Yeah, you'll be getting a call.
Dewhurst, who has a real opportunity to sort of be a more Bullock-style lieutenant governor, probably won't, because it's going to be in his interest to work with Governor Perry, because of Governor Perry's political ambition as well.
Who's that on line one?
All right. If you have any questions or comments for the podcast, you can email us at podcasts@texastribune.org. Thank you for listening over the year. On behalf of Evan, Ross, Ben, and our producer, Todd, I'm Elise. Have a happy holiday.